And that's, I think, the biggest trick of these cheap properties. We go, oh, it's a cheap property, I'll buy it. But are you able to handle it? Like, is your management team ready to handle it? Because it's totally different than a B-class property. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hey, welcome back to Pillars of Wealth Creation and another Hump Day Hustle. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me, as always, is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great today, Todd. How are you today?
I am fantastic. Looking forward to this episode. And John, what do you got going on these days? Anything new, anything exciting that we should be highlighting?
Just had a short break from work, and because the kids were out of school for a couple of days, end of the quarter, and we went out of town for a few days to celebrate my wife's grandmother's 90th birthday.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
Always good to see the family. And then also, I'm enjoying road trips a little bit more since I'm on Audible. I'm not usually a big fan of driving, especially, 8 hours with a bunch of kids in the car.
Yeah.
But now, I'm easier to pass the time. This is not a paid sponsorship of Audible, but I should start posting a link in the notes, though.
So you just like plug your earbuds in and ignore the kids and wife and just drive.
Yep, just drive and listen.
You say, listen, everybody, daddy is out of commission right now. I'm driving.
Yep.
So everybody shut up and go to sleep. Yeah. I'm listening to Audible.
So lots of learning about sales and management and all sorts of things, running a business. So
a good one on sales, I really liked it, and you've already listened to it, is it's by Jeb Blunt. Fanatical Prospecting, it's called Fanatical Prospecting. That was actually, I think, Joey Torkeldsen. He was on one of the previous episodes way back, probably like episode 30-ish. And he recommended Fanatical Prospecting by Jeb Blunt. So have you listened to that one yet?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Take a look at that one. That's really good.
Okay.
I liked it a lot. So I can give you some recommendations of some of the ones I've done, but
cool.
Audible's great. I love it too. And it passes a lot of time when you're driving, or especially these long road trips. We're talking about going out to Montana. We might drive to Montana to go skiing this winter. And that's like a 14-hour trip? So I will be likely plugging in my earbuds for long periods of time during that trip.
Right, right.
And try to focus on some of the learning stuff too. So that's good.
Anything new with you?
Yes, not crazy new. Just working still on trying to get some properties under contract. My goal right now is, you know, it's already Q4. It's crazy. It's getting towards the end of the year. But my goal right now is just to get a property under contract. I'm working diligently at it. But again, I've talked about it before on this episode or on the show, is I'm not willing to overpay just to get a property. And we'll talk about several properties probably during this show that I've been working on. But, you know, it seems as if oftentimes I'm just so far off. One of the properties actually recently I was actually pretty surprised that I was really close to being in the running, because it was an A-class property, or A-class area, probably B-plus property, but A-class area. And I was only off by, I think I was off by $400,000. So, which was really, really close, because it was a $27 million purchase. So, but I just couldn't go up. That was my max. And you've got to know when your max is. That's where people get in trouble, when they go, oh, it's only 400 grand. I can go 500 and I can get this deal done. Well, okay, great. But does that really work? You know, and maybe it does, but if you're already kind of feel like you're stretching your limits, do you really want to keep on going up? And when's enough enough? So, so yeah, just working on that. And I've talked about before on the show as well, just working on expanding some of my other businesses, kind of growing those, getting the bases in place so that we can do them the right way and pick that up. So picking up a couple coaching clients and yeah, that's it. The other thing I wanted to mention again, and I mentioned this the last time, is I'm doing the best Christmas ever, and people can nominate families. So if they have a family that they want to nominate for the best Christmas ever, basically a family that had some bad times fall upon them, it doesn't matter exactly what it is, but for no fault of their own, they've had some bad times fall upon them. And what we'll do with the best Christmas ever is we raise money to then, you know, get gifts for the kids and for you know, the adults, and give them the best Christmas ever. And so that's something that we're working on right now. So if you want to nominate a family, you can go to the best Christmas ever. Just I can't remember the website off the top of my head, but we'll put it in the show notes. But if you just Google best Christmas ever, I think it's bceevent.org. You can go there, you can nominate a family, and you can volunteer too if you want to, or you can make a donation as well if you want to do that. So yeah, go on there, do that if you got anybody that you're thinking of.
Sounds good. All right, well, let's get into the topic for today. Yeah. What we wanted to discuss is the differences and the pros and cons of pursuing an A-class property versus a B-class versus a C-class versus a D-class, or maybe even just grouping the top two against the bottom two. So let's start off with kind of looking at some of the pros of the lower end C and D-class. And Todd, maybe it'd be helpful if we provide kind of a brief definition of what a C and D class apartment building looks like. So can you provide some clarification on that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, there's no like exact definition, right? A lot of it's kind of opinion based. And if you ask a broker, they're pretty much it never is a D-class property. They'll never tell you this is a D-class area or a D-class property, because they always want to tell you it's a C-class or better. So you've got to determine for yourself, is it a C or a B or an A or a D? Typically, let's go from A down. Typically on an A-class property, it's pretty new. Not always. Sometimes it can be a very gentrified area and a property that's been completely renovated top to bottom. So it might be still an old structure, but everything in it has been renovated. Maybe the woodwork is still old or something like that, but it's got new plumbing. It's got, you know, new electrical. It's got brand new, beautiful cabinets with, you know, granite countertops and, you know, all the works. So that's your new property. It's got great amenities, typically. Got the pool, you know, got the 5-star gym and all that kind of stuff. The typical A-class property is going to be built within the last 10 years. Then you've got, you know, grades of A too. You've got your A-, then you get your B+, and those, you know, are just a step down. So think of like an A-B, maybe that's that 10-year-old to 15-year-old property. It's still in really good condition, but there's some things that are now starting to be, you know, needing to be either repaired or replaced. Your B+ is the same kind of range, maybe down to 20 years at the most. But so then your B-class property is going to be, you know, your typical like 20 to 30 year, maybe 40 year property, old property. And same thing with the area. The areas, it's not like it hasn't been left behind yet. You know, it hasn't been forgotten about. It's not necessarily a brand new area, but it's a place where people want to live. It's a place where kind of the middle income ends up living, and upper middle income, not necessarily just the middle, but upper middle oftentimes want to live there. So you're looking at like your 80s and newer buildings. Generally anything built in the 90s typically is B, unless it's low income housing, then we're talking a different story. But so then you've got your C class, and your C class is your older, you know, 60s, 70s, and 80s buildings. It's your middle to lower middle income. If you're looking at your median income, it's the median income and underneath that, it's typically a little bit of government assistance sprinkled in, some Section 8 housing, some other, you know, programs that might be sprinkled in, but it's not all of that. And it can be, but again, we're talking just general market rate. It's going to be sprinkled in. It's going to have some crime. Again, B is going to have a little bit of crime too, but it's not going to be as much. Of course, A has crime. Everything has crime. But I mean, typically your C has a little bit higher crime. It doesn't have to be higher crime, but oftentimes it is a little bit higher crime. Sometimes it's quite a bit higher crime. Once we get into very high crime stuff, then it's usually classified as D class. And the D class is going to be older buildings. It could even be a 60s or 70s or even 80s built building, but it's going to be in terrible condition usually. It's going to be abused. The tenants are a lot of government assistance or just not able to pay their rent. They're definitely lower income. They're renting 100% out of necessity, 0% out of want. They're never going to, at least in their current state, aren't going to qualify for a house. Your C class, most of them can't qualify for a house, but you do have a few tenants here and there that can qualify for a house or eventually will end up qualifying for a house. That's kind of where their stage is. B class, most of them could qualify for a house. And then A class, pretty much all of them could qualify to buy a house. And they're just living there because of a lifestyle choice. So that's the long, short version. I don't know.
Yeah. So I think maybe two categories to kind of point out is one is maybe the quality of the apartment or the condition of the apartment. And
another lights going on there.
You got a light show in the
background. Yeah, I got a light show in the background. Yeah, there you go.
So the condition of the apartment being one portion of that consideration, and then also the maybe the discretionary income discretionary expenses budget of the clientele, the tenant base.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then focusing in on just the beginning at the D and C class, let's look at some of the positives. So one big positive that comes to my mind is typically cash flow. You're typically, if you're out looking for cash flow, you typically can find that more so in a D and C class property.
Right.
And why would you say that is, Todd?
Well, first of all, it's cash flow on paper, right? So everything's on paper is what we're looking at. So just because we think it can cash flow doesn't mean it's going to cash flow. But on paper, your C and D class properties are going to have the best cash flow. Now, why is that? Because it's harder to perform on what the paper says. So we're going to buy this property for, let's say, $40,000 per unit versus the A class that may be $100,000 a unit or higher. We're buying that based on a cap rate, right? So C class, we're buying on a, let's call it a 7 cap rate. D class, we're maybe buying on a 8 or maybe even a 9 cap rate. So ultimately, it should be a better return, right? Because cap rate is your return. But the risk is in the management. Can we manage this property effectively to get those returns? And that's going to be the biggest challenge, because on C-class properties and especially D-class properties, when I talk about the tenant base, a lot of them are struggling. You've got a lot of single parents. You've got people that are living, most of them are living paycheck to paycheck. So if any little thing goes wrong, you know, if they've got a car and that's how they get to work and their car breaks down, they might not be able to get to work. They might get fired from their job. They can't afford to fix their car, and therefore they get fired. Now they don't have a job. They don't have a car. Now what are they going to do? You know, it's so the snowball effect to them happens very, very quickly. So that's your biggest probably risk, is that your tenants. And then it's when we talk about like a D class, especially your D class typically is higher crime rates. And so you've got that problem as well. A lot of the tenants, and again, this is generalizing. There's some phenomenal people that live in C and D class properties. So I don't want to throw them all under the bus, but they're generally, you've got a little more abuse to your properties, right? They don't maybe take quite as good a care of it. And that there's maybe several reasons for it. But one of the big reasons I think for it is that a lot of times they're used to living in properties where landlords abuse them. And by abusing them, I mean, they just got a crappy place to live and the landlord just doesn't care and maintain it. So the tenant doesn't care and maintain it. And so it's kind of this, again, this snowball effect where landlord doesn't want to touch it. They don't want to repair it. So the tenant goes, well, forget it. I'm not going to keep the property nice. And so it gets even worse. And so they're used to that. That's like their mentality. And it's difficult and takes a while for you to get those tenants to care again because they've been abused so long. And so that's a challenge too. I mean, just renovating the property is not quite enough. That's a start, but then you've got to make sure you're on top of your maintenance very quickly. You've got to make sure you've got programs in place to make sure these tenants are being communicated with. And so they understand, like, these people actually do care about me. Wow, this is unique and new. I'm going to now take care of their property. And so that's the biggest challenge, is I'd say the management of it is very difficult because of the type of tenant you typically have. And again, some of them are fantastic people. I own C class. I don't really think I own any D class, but I own C class. And I have some amazing tenants, but I've had plenty of the other ones too.
Yep. So I guess another thing to point out is that, you know, on paper, you're going to plan for the best case scenario a lot of times with your occupancy. But if you're running into a lot of problems where things don't get repaired, and then you lose a tenant, and then you take a long time to get things repaired. And, you know, that also can be a snowball effect where your occupancy goes down quite a bit, and then your cash flow that was great on paper suddenly disappears.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and that's a huge mistake when we talk about repairs. And it doesn't matter if it's A, B, C, or D. But for some reason, I think it's more prevalent in the C and D class, because I think more landlords just go, well, they're used to it. They're like, they're fine with it, you know. And these tenants, no matter what, they just get sick of it. They don't want to deal with a property that's not being maintained, so they're gonna move out. And oftentimes they're going to move out and they're going to leave it in disrepair. They're just not going to respect the property. If you don't respect them and respect your property enough to maintain it and repair it, they're not going to respect that or respect you or your property either. So it doesn't matter what class you're in, but in the C and D especially, it seems like it happens quite a bit. And I think people just don't budget for repairs and maintenance. And we talked about this, the age of the properties, and a lot of times, you know, if you got an A-class property, it's just not going to need nearly as much repair and maintenance because it's new. But if you've got this older property and it's got galvanized piping and it's got, you know, all these other things that are, you know, 50, 60 years old, well, it's going to need a lot of capital improvements. So if you don't budget for it, now you're stuck and then you're in that, you know, you're spinning in the grease. So.
Yep. Well, I've got another positive for the C and D class properties, and that would be that you can typically acquire them for less money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we got to look at, okay, is it good to acquire things for less money? And so there's a danger in that too, though. I mean, that is definitely a positive, John, is because now I can acquire a 100 unit property for 40 a door. That's 4 million. Perfect. I got this 100 unit property for $4 million, where if I buy this A-class property, I've got a 30 unit property for $4 million. Well, geez, you know, now I, with the C-class property, I can afford to hire on-site management and that kind of stuff, because I've got enough units, I've got enough income. With this A-class property, it's really hard to afford that because I've got this little 30 unit property. It just doesn't make any sense. So if we got to buy a 100 unit property, and it's A class, I'm going to spend, instead of 44 million, I'm going to spend whatever, 15 million. Well, maybe I can't do that. So yeah, that is a good thing, but here's the problem with it. Are you able to handle the C class property and especially the D class property? And that's, I think, the biggest trick of these cheap properties. We go, oh, it's a cheap property, I'll buy it. But are you able to handle it? Like, is your management team ready to handle it? Because it's totally different than a B-class property or to see in an A-class property. So that's a big trick. I think that the price is great, but we shouldn't always focus on the price. We need to focus on the whole picture.
Okay, cool. Well, another positive I have in mind for the lower end properties is that you have room for growth. So you can often change you can change the class of a property oftentimes with capital improvements or with better management. So you could change it from a D to a C or a C to a B. If you get up to an A, it's hard to go up higher than the top.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. You've got to be careful with that thinking. Although you're right 100%, what a lot of people do is they will think they can take a D class property in a D class neighborhood and change it into a B. Well, I got news for you. Now you've got a B class property in a D class neighborhood. It's overimproved. But it's still a pig, you know, it's still a D-class property. So granted, that might be good. That maybe is your plan. Maybe you're going to get government assistance. Maybe you're going to put a HAP contract on that, you know, and that you're going to run it like that. That might be great. That might be a great plan. But if you don't have a really good plan in place on why you took a D-class property in a D-class neighborhood and brought it to a B, it really doesn't matter, because typically those tenants aren't going to respect it. And they're not going to pay the rents you need them to pay to do those repairs. So be careful about improving a property that's in the neighborhood that the class of the property is already at. So like you said, an A-class property, if it's in an A-class property in an A-class neighborhood, what can I do to add value? Oftentimes nothing. You know, maybe there's some, but is it enough value to really justify it? But where you hit the nail on the head is, if I got a, you know, let's call it a C-class property in a B-class neighborhood, that's where we can really make some changes. Or a D-class property in a C neighborhood, we can make some changes. We just want to make sure we're bringing it up only to that level, maybe slightly above that level. But, you know, if you got a D-class property in a C-class neighborhood, don't bring it up to a B+. Don't bring it up to an A-. Bring it up to a B- at the most.
Yeah, but unless you have the kind of, unless you're the mayor and you can like change the whole
change the whole ecosystem there.
Right. You would have to bring in a lot of amenities and restaurants and all sorts of things.
Yeah. That's just not going to happen. I don't think one person's not going to do that unless they can pull those strings. Now, if the neighborhood's gentrifying, granted, you might want to step it up an extra level. Like I look back at property I have in Northeast Minneapolis. I wish I would have bought tons more. Northeast Minneapolis was gentrifying when I bought the property. And I did a level of renovation to the current market, which it worked just fine, but I could have over-renovated that property and it would have worked perfect as well. So probably cost me a little bit more money, because now I have done extra things to that property to improve it, because it's now a very gentrified area. So sometimes when you know the area is gentrified, and doing a little bit of over improvement is okay. I still wouldn't go gangbusters on it.
Mm-hmm. So you do have to kind of be aware of the neighborhood what are the trends. Is it gentrifying? Is it getting better? So
big con for me for the C and D is when you're buying a C and D, to me, you've got to be very careful about a few things. One is, what are the jobs in the area? What's that area? What's the city doing to improve that area? If it's nothing, if there's no jobs and the city's doing nothing to help that area out, be very careful about investing in there, because I don't think there's much opportunity. If you're investing in a C and D class area and it's got a lot of high crime, be very careful about that area, because good people don't put up with a lot of crime. And so good people are going to leave your buildings and you're going to be left with them, the criminals. So is that who you want in your building? I'd like C-class areas that are low crime, clean areas, just have lower kind of income, you know, earners. Those are typically good, you know, C-class areas that are low crime, but yeah, have jobs in the area. They're just lower paying jobs. You're more of your, you know, they're working in the factories and that type of stuff. But they're low crime. Those are great C-class areas. Those are the areas that you want to be in, or a C-class area where it's gentrifying and you think it'll become a B or maybe even eventually an A. Those are great areas as well. So just be careful when you're in these, you know, we can buy this property for 30 grand, 40 grand a unit, and we think it's going to be a great deal. The other thing we're seeing right now in the C-class space is, you know, your typical spread between your A and your C is going to be, you know, 5 cap, call it for an A and maybe an 8 cap, 9 cap for a C. So your typical spread is going to be like that 3 to 4. Right now we're seeing A class, let's call it at a 4, and C class at a 6. So you're only seeing, you know, now you're seeing in some cases even less than that. But you're seeing just a maybe like a 2-point spread there. So you got to be careful too, is what are the cap rates doing? Where we historically, and does it make sense to take on the extra risk for the little bit of return potential?
Yep, definitely. Well, I have another, a negative for C&D class. Well, maybe it's just kind of a mindset thing to be aware of. A lot of times, you know, people try to get into investing and they want to provide a good product to somebody that doesn't necessarily have it otherwise. So they look at a property that's been mismanaged or not updated appropriately, and then they can take care of that. They can provide the better product for those tenants and not necessarily try to change the class, but just provide a better product for that class. So the negative might be if that in and of itself is fine, but maybe just you have to be prepared for the tenants that are there. And I guess what I'm trying to say is don't let tenants take advantage of your goodwill. And right. You still have to be a good manager. And if somebody's not paying their rent, you can't just let them drag it on. Otherwise that will drag you down. Your goodwill will be the death of you.
Well, yeah. And you have to understand what you went into. You know, if you came into this property and you're improving it, you're going to have to change some of your tenant base. So if you're not willing to do that, well, then you have to understand that from the beginning. If you're not going to change your tenant base, you're going to have the same issues that were happening at the property prior to you taking over. So,
yep. You talked about kind of retraining tenants to take better care of the property themselves. And that might work for some tenants.
You're not retraining typically your current tenants though.
Right.
Maybe some of them, like you said, but most of them, no. You're going to have to find typically new tenants. And a lot of them though still have been kind of taken advantage of. And so just getting to that new property, new environment though, will help change their thought process and philosophy.
Yep. It's hard to change people's expectations and
very hard.
Their actions.
So. Very, very hard. If you think you're going to be the change maker, you're going to get people to change. You got a rude awakening. you're not the one that's going to do it. Hey, I want to interrupt this episode real quick to talk to you about Nate Armstrong. Our sponsor, Nate Armstrong, he's with homeinvest.com, and you want to get to know Nate. So go to homeinvest.com and just connect with Nate, talk to him, learn about his operation, what he's got going on. He's a turnkey provider, and it may not be right for you, but it could be the perfect fit. So it doesn't hurt. It's a free call, free consultation, just to figure out, you know, what they do, what they have to offer. And worst case is you're going to meet a great person who's really well educated in real estate. He's done a ton of different real estate strategies, and probably he's going to teach you a little bit, even on a short conversation with him. So go to homeinvest.com and connect with Nate's company. You're definitely not going to be disappointed. It's worth it. So thanks. And we'll get back to our show. So let's shift then, John, over to the A and B.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess let's start off with a positive. A class properties are typically going to be more steady as far as and predictable. You know, you already know what type of client base you're attracting. And as long as you can maintain the product, you should be able to maintain that client.
Yeah. And one thing I want to point out before we get too deep in the weeds here with the A and the B is that there's, and actually the same thing can be said with the C and the D and the B versus C. There's oftentimes a very big difference between, let's call it an A plus property, the very best property, and especially when we go B minus. There's a very, very big difference between the properties. So as we're going down the grading scale, the farther we go down from the A plus all the way to the B minus, that's a pretty big difference in tenant base, in pay, in really everything. So just so you're aware of that as we're talking about these, if we're relating like an A property and a B property together, you're probably talking like an A minus and a B plus. Those are pretty similar. But as we go down the grading scale, it just gets wider. So just listeners, be aware of that as we're talking. A lot of these are generalizations and not just, you know, complete facts. So,
yep.
So you mentioned the stability of the property, and that's 100%. You know, your A class should be your most stable and have the least amount of risk. Now, there's a lot of people that think, and I think it's false, actually. There's this thought of, it's not completely false, but there's this thought of these A-class properties, when the market ends up shifting, crashing, these A-class properties are all going to, you know, go under. And I think that's very short-sighted. I think most of these A-class properties will be just fine. It's actually the opposite. The D-class properties are the ones that are going to struggle the most. The A-class properties usually are very well capitalized, usually very strong companies that are purchasing them. And they can withstand an economic down cycle. Well, not 100% of them, but most of them are very well capitalized. And if they need to lower rents, they're going to lower rents. If they need to offer concessions, they're going to offer concessions. And the tenants are still going to pay. I mean, tenants still want luxury, and they still, that's still what they desire. Most high income earners in a bad economy don't lose their jobs. I mean, when you look at who loses their jobs in a bad economy is typically the middle class and lower middle class. So the middle class is usually the very hardest hit, as far as percentage wise and sheer numbers wise. And so A class, usually your executives still keep their jobs. Usually the higher paid earners keep their jobs and oftentimes actually earn more. So that's one thing to be very aware of, is that A class is typically pretty stable during up cycles, down cycles, and everything in between, pretty stable properties. And that's why people buy them. They provide low returns, which I call what I would call poor returns. But where else can you get into a return or investment vehicle that's very, very, very safe for, you know, 5% plus returns? Hard to find.
And I would add to that, the tenants that have these high paying jobs, even if they do have a pay decrease or maybe even a job loss, they probably have earned so much in the recent months and years that they've got a good safety net of their own where they can withstand the several months of not having an income and still be able to afford their rent.
And a lot of them are talented enough where they're going to go get their own, they're going to get a job very quickly because they're talented enough, or they have the resume or whatever it is, but they can get a job pretty quickly. The other thing is they care about their credit. They care about getting an eviction. Like, that means a lot to them because they want to live in a nice place. They want to buy a house eventually. They don't want to have this burden put upon them. So they're going to pay their rent. That's going to be something they're going to make sure they do. Where when you get down to the C class and the D class, they're never going to buy a house. They don't have a credit card. A lot of them don't have a bank account. A lot of them already have two or three evictions on their record. So is it that big of a deal if they get evicted? Probably not. Just go find a new place. You know, They've been through it before. And so they understand it. They'll go and just move in with a relative or with a friend or whatever. So, that's there's another downfall I would say about the, even in the B and the C and the D class properties is, oftentimes those people are going to find roommates to live with in a bad economy, and vacancy rates will go up in the B, C, and D versus, I think, in the A, when you look at history, stays pretty stable.
Yeah, an eviction is very scary if you've never had one before, but if you've had one or two or three, it's just another one.
So. Yeah. Yeah, they go get them expunged or whatever, and they got the story to tell, and you can always find a landlord that'll accept them, or, you know, you somehow get them off your record. I don't know. People, there's professionals that I swear that do it for a living, go get evicted for a living. So,
I guess, yeah. You know, one of the, to kind of provide a conflicting viewpoint, I guess one idea with a higher end tenant is that they can downsize their living expectations and still have a good, you know, safe place to live, a nice place to live. If they're downsizing from an A plus luxury apartment, maybe that's one of two or three places that they have. So they could get rid of the one extra one and not really change their lifestyle too much.
And that's true to an extent. I mean, there's definitely no one sector that's completely insulated from a bad economy. I mean, they're still going to have problems with occupancy, and, you know, their rents are going to go down. But again, usually the companies buying those are very well insulated. They're very well capitalized, and they can withstand any of that happening for a period of time. And the other thing is, when economy bounces back, typically the first people to bounce back are the higher earner people. And so, again, they're going to be willing to pay more quicker than anybody else. Their occupancy is going to go up quicker than anybody else. And I think the A class is, it's stable for a reason. And, you know, how many people want to be living in a nice place and go to a not so nice place? Or how many people want to downsize?
It's not a fun thing.
Most people don't. Most people don't want to downsize. You know, I could care less myself, but most people just don't. They don't want to downsize. They're not going to do it. They're going to do everything in their power to keep their style of living. Once they've been living the high class, they're going to stay at the high class. And that's what they want to do. And so if you haven't been living in the high class, you probably don't care. So, what else for A and B?
Well, the appreciation for these type of properties can be a lot more than the C and D classes. So, I don't know, you had a good example of that earlier before we recorded, but.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's just take a simple example. You raise the NOI, the net operating income, on a, well, let's call it a C-class property that sells at a 10 cap, which nothing's selling at a 10 cap. But for ease of math, for an example, I'm going to use that. So sells at a 10 cap, you raise the NOI by 100 grand. That's $1 million of value you created. Now, congratulations, that's awesome. Right. But I've got an A class property and that sells for a 5 cap, which, again, most A classes right now are selling for much lower than a 5 cap, but for purposes, I'm going to use that. So it sells at a 5 cap. Well, now you created $2 million worth of value.
With that same
NOI. With that same NOI change. So I just increased my NOI by 100 grand on a 5 cap versus a 10 cap. And I've created an extra $1 million worth of value. Now, more realistic, that C class is at an 8 cap or 7 cap. Well, an 8 cap is what, 1.25 million. So you've just created, $750,000 worth of value. So either way, you're creating more value on a lower cap rate. And that's why when people go, oh, I'm in, I want to invest in, you know, whatever, a mobile home park, which I've looked into, and I like the idea of mobile home parks. But one of the downfalls with the mobile home park is that, yeah, you can get them at a great cap rate. So you're going to buy it at a 10 cap, okay? Which right now that's really hard to do, but you're going to buy it at a 10 cap. Okay, again, you do that value, you add 100K of NOI, you just created $1 million, which is great. But if you did that with a 5 cap, you created $2 million. So there's a downfall with high cap rates. Create less value.
And I would probably say that's easier to increase that NOI with the A-class property, because you can add different amenities or different
benefits. Great point, John. Yeah.
That the A-class tenant is more willing and able to afford.
Yes. Yes. Especially in a growing economy. The C-class, I just look at it sheer dollar wise. Okay. Right. If I'm going to raise rents on a place that's renting for $2,000 a month, and I can raise rents by, 2%. What's that? $400. If I have a place that's renting for, $700 a month, and I raise rent by 2%, what's that? $140. No, I'm off. $14. Sorry. $14. $40. Okay, but either way, the increase, I added a couple zeros there, or a zero there. Either way, the increase is way more. On the A-class, 2% increase on an A-class on a higher rent is going to be way more than a C-class. And so you're in sheer dollar volume, you're adding more. Therefore, your NOI, again, increases even more. And when we take it on a cap rate basis, now you just have the power of that. So we really drastically changed our profit just by being in an A class versus a C class. So definitely a benefit of the B and the C, or B and the A class, is the lower cap rates. And those cap rates, I would say, don't fluctuate as much either. Okay. So right now in today's market, it's really hot. In a lot of areas, the C classes are selling around that 6 and 7 cap, sometimes even lower, sometimes a little higher, but 6 and 7 cap. Where in a bad economy, they're going to sell for like a 9 and 10 cap. A class is going to sell, let's say right now, for a 4 cap, where in a bad economy, it's going to sell for a 5 cap. So you've got less fluctuation in the cap rates. So that's another big benefit of like an A versus a C or a D.
Yep. So I'll do another negative for A and B class, which is just an opposite of what I said was the positive for C and D. And it's that you need a lot more money to get an A class property.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So you definitely, we talk about, you got 100 units and you're going to spend, let's call it 15 million just to get 100 units, where a C class, for 15 million, I could probably buy, maybe I could buy 300 units, 250 units, whatever it is, but I can buy a lot more property with the C versus the A. And now when we talk about, we talked about raising rents on an A class, but we've got more units now on a C class, where we can raise rents on more units, which creates a lot more income as well. So, there's positives to having extra units and being able to buy these bigger properties as well. So yeah, definitely more expensive. That's definitely a downfall. I was looking at an A class property and did not write an offer on it because they're expecting to sell it for $110,000 a unit. which in this market is that I'm looking at is a lot of money. That property, you know, if I were to buy that, we talk about like return expectations. That property, if I were to buy it, when I calculated it, was going to be at like it's just under a 6% internal rate of return. Well, that does not even come close to meeting my metrics. I can't buy a property at 6% return. Now, the good thing is it would be pretty stable. Like I could pretty much, you can't ever make a promise, but that's as close to a promise as I could probably make to my investors that we will get that return. Like I feel very confident that there's very few things that'll get in our way to get us that return. So that's a good thing, but the bad thing is it's only 6% return internal rate of return. Like my investors are expecting, you know, closer to 15% internal rate of return. I can't get that with this property in particular, but with most A classes, it's very hard to get.
Yep. So yeah, that's the challenge. So I think A class properties tend to attract larger institutions, which don't need a high return. They just need to park their cash somewhere so that it's safer than whatever else than their bank account.
Yep. So kind of in closing, John, and we could probably pick up a lot of different pros and cons to A and B and B and C, and we could kind of, you know, we didn't break them down a ton, but in closing for me, when you're looking at a property, the B and C class are both great assets to be looking at. A is, to me, is challenging because we can't hit our return expectations, or it's very, very hard to hit our return expectations. We can't add enough value add a lot of times to be able to hit our return expectations. D class is challenging because it's typically high crime. Typically, we're going to have a challenge getting our rents and all that, and I don't want to deal with that stuff. So B and C, I like. Now, if you're going to go with a C, make sure it's a C and not a D. That's a big thing because the broker will tell you it's a C, even if it's a D. They're not going to tell you it's a D. The other thing is make sure it's in an area that's low crime, not high crime. You don't want C class properties that are in high crime, at least in my opinion. And you also want to make sure there's jobs in the area. Jobs for those tenants that you're going to be getting in the area. And that's the same thing with B class too. You want to make sure there's jobs in the area, but in C class, it's even more important because oftentimes there's not. And that's why it went from that A, because every building was an A, most cases, right? So this 1970s building that you're buying as a C class property used to be an A class property at some point in time. But why did it become a C? Did it become a C because all the jobs are gone and nobody wants to live in that area? Okay. Or, you know, is it now, have now jobs started coming back, or maybe jobs are still there, but they're just jobs that are going to attract C class tenants? You know, jobs like, you know, in factories and more labor jobs. So you got to look at, you know, what that is. We want to make sure there's still drivers that are going to be positive for that submarket, that neighborhood. So those to me are the best properties to buy. They're going to be good and stable during the you know, good times and bad. They're going to create the best amount of cash flow, and they're still going to provide good returns. You know, as you increase your NOI, they're going to still provide good returns. So,
very good. It's good to understand all this and be proactively thinking about it when you're looking at making a purchase. So,
yeah, I think, again, one last thing, people get caught up in two things when they're looking at investments. One thing they get caught up is the shiny object syndrome, right? This goes for many different things, but they look at this beautiful A-class property and they're like, oh, it's got a pool, it's got a gym, it's got this, it's got that. It's a sexy property. It's beautiful, right? And so I want to pay for it and I'm going to buy it. The other thing they look at is price. They go, wow, I can buy 150 units for $4 million. That's awesome. I'm going to do that. I want to own 150 unit property. Well, owning 150 unit piece of junk is no good if it's a piece of junk, right? So let's own a decent property in a decent area with decent things happening and only own 100 unit property. You know, we don't want to, and let's forget about the eye candy property too. Like, so people get stuck in those kind of two different mindsets, it seems, off quite often.
Yep. Very good. Well, to our listeners and viewers, if you enjoyed this discussion, and if you have anything to add to it, we'd love to hear from you. You can comment on the YouTube video. You can comment on our Facebook page. That's probably a really great place to have a discussion. And while you're at it, we'd love your rating and review on iTunes, and just so we can help to build this podcast and get more people who can enjoy the content here.
Awesome. John, appreciate you joining me, and have a fantastic rest of the day, man. Make every day a Saturday.
You too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy to understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today.